Chapter 3, Evils of Religious Legislation. The speaker said, "In beginning the study of civil government and religion, we will take the Declaration of Independence to start with. All men are born free and equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights." At that time, this was a new statement, because there had been monarchical forms of government for ages, men being born noble, so-called, and recognized as such. But our country denied the nobility of birth and asserted all men to be free and equal in matters of rights. And so every man in this nation has all the rights of all others, and with a right to assert them. The president has no other right than the humblest citizen. He has more authority, but no additional rights. Senators and other lawmakers are servants, we the people the masters. The president has only delegated authority, receiving it from the people, so that in this country there are no rulers except the people. Every man, then, is a master and a ruler, and those we elect are our servants, serving more or less according to their office. This is not a new idea, but the very one our fathers had in view when they made the Declaration. President Lincoln declared our government to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. If all would abide by this Declaration, we would indeed be a happy people. The Declaration of Independence embodies the very idea expressed in Christ's gospel, that of perfect liberty. When a republic reaches that point where they cease to govern themselves, a power will arise to govern them, so that the republic will cease to exist, even ours. As we are then equal with equal rights, how does a government arise? Each has the right to assert his right, but for the good of all, each surrenders certain rights. But there are some that are inalienable rights and cannot be delegated, among them being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There are others which we will notice presently. If each retained all his rights and asserted them independently, no one would be as well off as he would by surrendering certain ones. Therefore, each one does so surrender some for the good of all. For instance, each one has the right of self-protection of person, family, and property. But as all do not recognize the right, some invade the rights of others, so the amount of single protection one possesses is not adequate. Hence men combine for the purpose of obtaining the benefit of the combined strength of all, so that each receives in turn 1,000-fold for what he so surrenders. It is the interest, therefore, of all men to enter into some such compact, and the result is civil government. So that statement is true that asserts that governments derive their powers from the governed. The speaker then read from the Massachusetts Bill of Rights to substantiate his statements. "Commonwealth," he said, "means commonwealth, common good, and that is what governments are organized for. But there are certain rights that no man can surrender and be a man, and one of these is the right of conscience. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts, as an example, admits this and says that no man can ever receive an equivalent for them. No man can surrender, for instance, his right to believe. At least no man has any right to do so. The right to search the Scriptures for himself, find out the truth for himself, and obey it for himself. To any man or any form of government." Now we come to consider the denial of the right of any government to legislate in matters of religion. It has no right to legislate against or in favor of what any man believes. It has no right to legislate in favor of or against Christianity. Men can never assent to legislation in favor of the religion they profess without surrendering the right of belief, because they surrender their right to change their belief afterwards, so that in doing so, men surrender their religious liberty. Ever deny, then, the power of government to legislate in favor of what you believe. This is genuine assertion of religious liberty. Tell this to others also, because the assertion of religious liberty has not reached this point. The assertion of my right to believe as I please is not true religious liberty, but my assertion of your right to believe as you please is true religious liberty. The speaker then quoted Macaulay's ironical argument that the majority have the right to assert their belief and force the minority to change their belief, to harmonize with their own. The time has come, however, for us to assert the right of others to believe as they please, and to assert it at all times and places. If you are I, sit idly down and see another's rights invaded and taken away and do nothing, because it does not harm us, we will have no right to complain when ours are invaded. The true solution, then, of the problem is to assert the rights of others. The question is not who is right, but what are the individual rights? The Baptist has the right to believe as he does, but he has no right to compel a Methodist to act as if he were a Baptist. And so of all denominations, every man having a right to do what he pleases, but not the right to use the civil power to compel any man to respect any religion. A man has a right to be an infidel or Christian as he pleases, and no one has a right to interfere with him. So long as the Constitution stands as it is, all are protected in their rights, and even though infidels or Catholics filled all the seats in Congress, they could pass no laws hurtful to Christianity, because the Constitution forbids religious legislation. Now, brethren, in announcing our position, bear in mind that we stand on the Constitution and Declaration of Independence.